The dockside was deserted and growing darker. I felt like taking myself up the gangplank in search of Mr. Grummidge. But, alas, my good manners prevailed. I remained where I was, standing in a dreamlike state, thinking I know not what. But gradually, like a telescope being focused, I began to realize I was watching something clinging to one of the mooring ropes on the ship's stern. It reminded me of a picture I once had seen of a sloth, an animal that hangs upside down upon jungle vines. But this, I gradually perceived, was a man. He appeared to be shimmying himself from the dock up to the Seahawk. Even as I realized what I was seeing, he boarded the ship and was gone. I had no time to absorb that vision before I heard angry voices. Turning, I saw Mr. Grummidge appear at the topgallant rail, engaged in an argument with someone I could not see. My gentleman repeatedly looked down at me and, so I thought, gesticulated in my direction as if I were the subject of a heated discussion. At last, Mr. Grummidge came down to the dock. As he drew near, I saw that his face was flushed with an angry eye that alarmed me. "Is something amiss?" I asked in a whisper.
"Not at all," he snapped. "All is as planned. You've been expected. The ship's cargo is loaded. The captain is ready to sail. But..."
He trailed off, looked back at the ship, then turned again to me.
"It's just that... You see, those two families, the ones you would be traveling with, your companions, they have not arrived."
"But they will?" I said, trying to compose myself.
"That's not entirely certain," Mr. Grummidge allowed. "The second mate informs me that one family sent word that they could not reach Liverpool in time. The other family has a seriously ill child. There is concern that she should not be moved."
Again, Mr. Grummidge glanced over his shoulder at the Seahawk, as if, in some fashion, these events were the ship's fault. Turning back to me, he continued,
"As it stands, Captain Jaggery will accept no delay of departure. Quite proper, he has his orders."
"But Mr. Grummidge, sir," I asked in dismay, "what shall I do?"
"Do? Miss Doyle, your father left orders that you were to travel on this ship at this time. I have very specific written orders in that regard. He left no money to arrange otherwise. As for myself," he said, "I'm off for Scotland tonight on pressing business."
"But surely," I cried, frustrated by the way Mr. Grummidge was talking as much as by his news, "surely I mustn't travel alone."
"Miss Doyle," he returned, "being upon a ship with the full complement of captain and crew could hardly be construed as traveling alone."
But that would be all men, Mr. Grummidge, and
I am a girl. It would be wrong,"
I cried in absolute confidence that I was echoing the beliefs of my beloved parents. Mr. Grummidge drew himself up.
"Miss Doyle," he said loftily, "in my world, judgments as to rights and wrongs are left to my Creator, not to children. Now be so good as to board the Seahawk at once."